Loud and Clear.
Welcome back to Loud and Clear. I'm John Kiriakou.
And I'm Brian Becker.
Haitian President Jovenel Moïse began his first day of one-man rule yesterday upon the end of the country's bicameral legislature. Haiti failed to hold legislative and local elections in October, and so the lower chamber just got up and left. And two-thirds of the upper chamber also left office. President Moïse said that he would take the money that would have been spent on legislative salaries and spend it instead on education. But protesters accuse his administration of extreme corruption. We're joined from New York by Kim Ives. He's an editor of the newspaper Haiti Liberté. Welcome back, Kim.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Brian.
Kim, you look at some of the press today and yesterday, and they say, wow, this is really progressive. What a great idea. You have all these corrupt legislators, and they're not in office anymore as of yesterday. And so the president's going to take this money, and he's going to build schools with it. Is it really that simple?
Yes. The president is king. That's a great step forward.
Long live the king.
Long live the king. Yeah. No, I think this is, as they say in Creole, bien compté, mal calculé. You count well, but you calculate badly. And I think he's badly calculated. I think he would have done better to keep the parliament there in some form as a buffer. But now it's all on him. He's already gone through 3 months of basically permanent shutdown of Haiti at the end of 2019. People were, they call it pays lock, the Haiti lockdown. And nothing was functioning. Barricades on all the streets, general strike, schools weren't working, state offices, businesses, everything was closed. And he had a, you know, the month of December is always sort of a truce because people like to celebrate the holidays and family come down for the holidays, et cetera. But they use this to make kind of an offensive, charm offensive, if you will, putting out all kinds of fancily produced videos on WhatsApp and bringing down a train of people from the State Department, and the OAS was just there this past week. The Vatican was involved, the UN, all the usual suspects trying to say there needs to be compromise, there needs to be dialogue, you know, proposals we never hear in Venezuela or Bolivia. And here he's now pouring gasoline on the fire to me because he's sending all these parliamentarians away. And he announced it, and he has no constitutional authority to dissolve parliament. That's up to parliament whether they can do it or not. And in fact, the 10 senators who remain still with mandates are saying he's way overstepping himself. So I think this whole thing is going to start to explode again in the next few weeks.
Well, that kind of leads to my next question. How long is it going to take before Haitians conclude that things just aren't getting any better for them, whether it's with an intact legislature or with a president who is able to rule at least temporarily by fiat? Things just aren't getting any better.
Right. Well, yeah, he's done this very demagogic move of saying, OK, I'm going to take the parliament's salaries and build 10 high schools with it. You know, we might get some momentary traction with that because the people basically see the parliamentarians as a bunch of guys who drive around in big cars with security and don't do much. So he'll be able to score some demagogic points there. But very quickly, the situation is going to degenerate. Nothing fundamentally has been solved. The people still have no power, no food. They are hungry, angry, without work, double-digit inflation. The situation is a huge mess, and no amount of verbiage from the State Department or the OAS or any of the other supporters of the Jovenel regime is going to resolve that. So to me, we are really on the verge, I believe, of Haiti's second great social revolution, the first one having been, of course, in 1804. I mean, the people everywhere in the streets, as I went around this fall talking to the guys skirmishing with the police and putting up the barricades, they want system change, system change. They're not just talking about changing the government. They know that doesn't resolve much. They want to change the whole system. And so I think, at least subjectively and objectively as well, the conditions are very ripe for a major revolution.
Let's talk about what the economic context is, Kim Ives. We're talking about the breakdown in governance. But for the masses of people in Haiti, what are they experiencing? What's Haiti experiencing on the economic level?
Oh, it's a disaster because the Petro-Caribe alliance that Hugo Chavez launched in 2005 basically threw Haiti a lifeline. Haiti brought it online there in 2008, despite the fierce resistance of the U.S. State Department, as we outlined in our Haiti Liberté series from documents WikiLeaks gave us, a confidential State Department document. But the arrangement came online, and essentially, as your listeners may know, Haiti got all its petroleum, 20,000 barrels a day, from Venezuela, and was only had to pay 60% up front. 40% was going into a fund called the Petro-Caribe Fund. And so over the course of those 10 years, from 2008 till 2018, when it went out of commission because of the Trump sanctions against Venezuela, Haiti had about $2 billion, which was burned through by the PHTK, the party of Jovenel Moïse, his mentor, Michel Martelly. So this gave Haiti sort of a period where they had cheap gas and good credit, and they could make projects. But all of that has gone away. Now there is nothing. And Jovenel Moïse came in making all these promises. He was going to give power 24/7 within 18 months. That's not happening. He's at loggerheads with the petroleum providers to the country, which have come in since Venezuela was pushed out. And he's constantly having them cut off the gas supplies. And so you end up having these giant gas riots practically in the city as gas is down to a minimum, a trickle. And you have no factories or businesses able to function. So the situation is very dire for the population who are hungry and really see no light at the end of the tunnel.
Kim Ives is our guest. Kim, you know, there's a lot of commentary, which I consider to be, I'll say it in advance of what I'm going to say, somewhat cavalier about the American empire, the U.S. empire as an empire in decline. And that may be true in a big, broad sort of trajectories or strokes. But when you think about what Haiti was receiving from Venezuela and how it was a lifeline and how it was so important for the masses and how with a shift or change in U.S. policy or an acceleration of its aggression against Venezuela, and as a consequence, all of the attendant countries that received aid from the Bolivarian Revolution and its internationalist orientation, the U.S. can inflict a lot of pain right away. Talk about how the people in Haiti perceive that or how you perceive it.
Well, absolutely. I think the people of Haiti, and I tried to align my outlook with theirs, are very aware of the power of the U.S. empire and the whim of Donald Trump coming in to sink this tremendous solidarity fund, which Haiti had and which was, being plundered by this clown mafia, which has come into power. But nonetheless, there was the possibility they would have access to it. So I think the anti-imperialism in Haiti, the deep anger, which is part of the Haitian DNA. Let's recall this was the original touchstone of revolution in the hemisphere. It was the Haitians that gave Bolivar all his material and support to carry out the liberation of South America. So after practically two decades of foreign military occupation by the United Nations, working at the behest of Washington, coming in there, Haitians are fed up. And, you know, they've always had this hope that the Washington aid would somehow advance things. But on the contrary, over the past 40 to 50 years, it's done nothing but to sink the people into deeper misery and poverty.
I want to ask you also about Haiti's recovery from natural disasters. Haiti's gone through earthquakes. 10 years ago, there was a massive earthquake. Just 2 years ago, the country had to endure a hurricane. Has Haiti been able to rebuild after these disasters?
No, because the earthquake money was embezzled just the same way as the Petro-Caribbean money was. Apparently, the world, they say it was $13 billion through individuals and multilateral donations, which was given to Haiti. And in the end result, what we saw built under the direction of Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton was a sweatshop complex in the north of Haiti built on some of Haiti's most fertile farmland in Caracol near Cape Haitien. And then two luxury hotels, the Royal Oasis and the Best Western, which are both now going out of business. Supposedly the money coming in to them was going to trickle down to the people. Well, that didn't happen. So the people were already bitter about the rechanneling, the plundering, the interception of the $13 billion, which had supposedly been given to them by good-hearted people around the world after the 2010 earthquake, but essentially nothing was done.
We will leave it there. We were joined from New York by Kim Ives. He is an editor of the newspaper Haiti Liberté. You've been listening to Loud and Clear. Be sure to go to our Facebook page, Loud and Clear with Brian Becker, for daily updates. If you enjoy the show and want your friends to hear it, let us know by liking the page on Facebook. And you can follow us on Twitter at Loud Clear Radio. You can hear us every day, Monday through Friday, from 4 to 6 p.m. on 105.5 FM and 1390 AM in the Washington, D.C. area. You can also hear us at SputnikNews.com and as a podcast at iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, and Spotify. Remember, telling the truth is important, but to make a difference, it has to be loud and clear. Stay tuned to Radio Sputnik.
Loud and Clear.